I'm glad that we're now putting you on spot. Sam woke up at 4 a.m. this morning after a great Celtics game last night. He comes home to his dog throwing up everywhere, and now he's going directly into the podcast. So
yeah, it's good. Luckily, the Celtics have given – I'm just in a great mood in general. They've put me in a good mood. They would never let me down. Yeah. I've never regretted staying up till 10 o'clock to watch them. I always go to bed happy. I just go to sleep very – a lot of, like, joy in my heart. You know, like, if you were to go to bed mad, of course, you don't fall asleep for, like, hours. And that would be even worse. But, of course, that would never happen to me.
Yeah, I mean, they always say never go to bed angry when you're in a toxic relationship with an NBA team.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so that's like the number one relationship advice they always give.
So, yeah, I want to lead with the Celtics game last night, the in-season tournament game against the Pacers. I wanted to lead with the Tobias Harris trade talk, like I said, but since we got some crazy good content, including Sam going insane during the game and on the timeline and in group DMs, I figured it'd be best to lead with that. But before we get into that, subscribe to the Patreon if you have not already. We made our in-season tournament predictions last week on the episode. The episode is probably even funnier now in retrospect because I got the first two games so wrong.
I picked
the Kings based on vibes, and I picked the Celtics based on the fact I thought they were the better team. And what happened was the vibes were good for the Pacers, and the Pelicans are a nightmare matchup for the Kings. So we'll talk about both in-season tournament games now, but if you want to hear our predictions, we also talked a lot about some recent NBA news involving the Dallas Mavericks and Josh Giddey, unfortunately. But if you want to check that out, subscribe to the UNOBALL Patreon. Link is in the description. We'll be back later this week with an extra episode as well, and you can watch us record the main episodes live on playback as well every single week. So, Sam, 3 weeks ago, the Sixers and the Pacers played in the in-season tournament play-in games, essentially. So, leading up to this. And on the Patreon episode we did that week, I said to you, watching Haliburton reminded me of watching Jokic 5 years ago. I said 3 years ago. I meant 5 years ago. COVID has broken my brain due to time. Mm-hmm. It felt like watching an MVP candidate before he became an MVP candidate. He was kind of doing whatever he wanted against the Sixers defense, which up until that point had done pretty well with players of his ilk to start the season. He has kind of taken a step as a on-ball creator scorer type, which I think was the last thing that we really needed to see from him as an offensive player to enter like the top five offensive players in the NBA conversation. And you were a little bit skeptical. So let the people know how you're feeling today about Haliburton after he essentially did the same exact thing to your team that he did to the Sixers a few weeks ago, beating the Celtics to advance in the in-season tournament last night.
I think I called that when I said that when I was naysaying that, I said that like this is probably going to bite me in the ass because you always never want to do this. I feel exactly the same watching Tyrese Haliburton. I was not. It's gonna sound like cope and like I'm hating. I really was not like super impressed. Like he's clearly like very good. He's Donovan Mitchell. Yeah, like it's like a very similar thing to me to watching Donovan Mitchell, where it's like this guy's the offense. He's very good at what he does. He makes a lot of the right play. He's not very good on defense, and kind of having him out there compromises you really badly. The Celtics missed a lot of open threes in this game. I honestly thought the Pacers got a lot more out of like Aaron Nesmith and some of their wings, kind of rotating and making things really hard on the Celtics guards. I thought this was more a game about the Celtics being exactly the same team we thought they were. High leverage national TV game. They don't have Porzingis out there, but it looked like another Celtics Heat game to me, to be totally honest. Like it's the same thing over again, where they are, you know, they're not able to score. You rely on 3-point shooting. You shoot 27% or whatever he did. They shoot 40 plus. Sorry, you lose that game a lot of the time, especially when you turn the ball over. What was it, 17 times, especially on the road, especially without Porzingis? Like, I don't know. I'm not usually like much of a coper necessarily. Like, I do feel like pretty, if somebody's amazing, I'll say somebody's amazing. Just watching the game live, I didn't think Haliburton was the most important part of that game for them. He had a triple double. He was amazing. He was clearly very good. I think Chioto was cooking when he pointed out that this happens every time we have a young guard, that we're in the young guard life cycle where everyone's like, oh my God, Haliburton triple double, he's arrived, yada, yada, yada. And I'm not saying he's bad. Obviously he's very good. He just beat the Celtics, but he's a guard. He's Donovan Mitchell. He'll be in the all NBA conversation. He'll probably make it this year. There will be years where he doesn't make it and it looks a little bit worse and he has a rougher time with some of the teammates around him. That's kind of what I project. I think we need to pump the brakes a little bit with the Tyrese Haliburton stuff.
So Chioto's star guard cycle that he was talking about yesterday was really interesting. This is what he said. I feel like every star young guard has followed the same cycle the past few years. Look at this guy's number. Is he the best young guard in the league? Cycle two, are we sure this guy wins playing basketball? Cycle three, he puts up great stats, but it's really tough to win with him. I'd rather have insert young guard in the first stage of the cycle.
Yes.
Which I totally understand. I think that we've done this now with Trae Young, Ja Morant, Donovan Mitchell, yeah. Pretty much everyone we have done this with at some point. Other than, I guess, Luka Doncic and Devin Booker being such a late riser in this category kind of made him be like the one everyone was skeptical of. Not to say that Devin Booker wasn't very good when he was young, but their team sucked. So people doubted him more and he didn't get as much credit as these guys that are on playoff teams.
Well, and I would say, like, because that's how Tyrese Haliburton really owns me, is he has a Devin Booker style, because I felt pretty similarly to Devin Booker when Devin Booker was coming up, where I was like, I'd like to see it in the playoffs. This guy's clearly very good, but like, what changes, what separates him from, you know, whatever other peer he had during that, you know, like, I'm trying to think of the other guards that were going on like during that time. Like, I think you've got to be a really special player to be a best player on a championship team caliber guard. I love Shea. I'm not willing to go there with Shea. I think James Harden is probably the closest we've come to that. For a guy like who hasn't won the championship. And then like Steph Curry is obviously the one who's literally the greatest shooter of all time. So, you know, I think a Devin Booker style rise, like, could make him, like, if he were to be really good in the playoffs and he were to suddenly be a defender, because that was what I saw out there. In the second quarter, the Celtics built a 10-point lead by just attacking Tyrese Haliburton, and then they just kind of went away from that for some reason. And I don't see that getting better. It's a similar thing that kind of hard-capped Trae Young's ceiling, where now he is clearly not as deficient a defender as Trae Young. I want to make that clear. But I still would like to see it, and this is a guy who has not been in the playoffs yet. So, you know, maybe he owns me, maybe not. I generally speaking, I feel pretty comfortable betting against those guys being like transcendent, like genre defining, era defining guys. I've seen this a billion times. You know, there is the Devin Bookers who make it out and it ends up being okay. I'm okay with being on the other side of that with Tyrese Haliburton. And if I'm owned, I'm owned.
Okay. Here's where I'm going to push back a little bit. I think that there are very few players in the NBA that have The defensive stuff is 100% true. He's the gap between his defense and his offense is the largest of any player in the NBA, I would say. Like, even Jokic can impact the game defensively because he's just massive and can get rebounds and has some, you know, active hands and stuff. Halliburton's gap between his offense and his defense is massive. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a top five offensive player in the NBA and a
player in the NBA. Having said that, offensively, the combination of skills that he has as a guy who can function on the ball as a lead creator when he's on the court. Now, some of this is due to the fact that they play up and down a lot. They don't try a lot on defense. They did a little bit last night, and it showed through in that game. They were able to stop the Celtics more so than they've been able to stop a lot of other teams, including the Sixers, who they played earlier this year, including some teams that they've kind of played down to, like the Wizards, for example. But the thing with Halley is that he's so efficient at every level as a scorer. Zach Lowe said that he's shooting like 52% on long twos to start this year. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. He's one of the best passers in the NBA. And he's also a guy who creates a lot of his own offense, can get to the cup, is an elite finisher. And really the only thing that is holding him back is the defense. Offensively, he's miles ahead of Donovan Mitchell, in my opinion. Offensively, he's miles ahead of pretty much any young guard except for... Honestly, I would just flat out say any guard except for like Booker and Luka. I think that if you were to talk about two-way stuff, sure, throw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in there, throw some other guys in there. But in terms of, you know, obviously you have Steph as well, who's an all-timer, but is, you know, he's not in a great situation right now. And as his career winds down, I don't know how, you know, how impactful he's going to be compared to where he was at a few years ago. But my point on this whole thing is that Tyrese Halliburton has a very specific, special blend of offensive skills that make him so hard to guard. And it's the fact that he is so, like, that, first off, the way that he shoots threes is, like, brain-breaking to me. Like, the shot looks janky, and he puts a ton of arc on it. And I was commenting on this when I watched the Sixers game and when I watched the Celtics game. It's like he puts this insane arc on it, and it only either hits the front of the rim or is like a complete swish. And you saw that last night towards the end of the game in Indiana versus the Celtics. And once again, he just takes over down the stretch of these games because he is able to just control the pace of the game, control the offense. Like, he is truly just a crazy blend of touch and skill and passing ability. And he reads the game so fast. That's the thing that I've noticed a lot watching him this year, is like how fast he really reads the game, where he can make a decision in a split second, where like there's just so few players, forget young, so few players in the NBA that can do that. I do think the defensive things are 100% a concern, but I also think that this team is, I disagree with you. I think this team stinks. I think that Halliburton is covering up for a lot of, did they play well last night? Sure. Aaron Nesmith had a nice game. Bruce Brown had a nice game. I've watched them a lot though, and I think that he's getting a ton out of a very lackluster roster. And I think that they need to be trading for, whether it's at this deadline or next summer, a true number two that can fit with him and is synergistic with his game to take them to that next level. Because I think if they don't make any moves and they go into the playoffs, I still think that they're a team that's not going to win a playoff series. And if they do win a playoff series, it might be in a similar style to the Kings last year, where I know the Kings lost, but they got to game seven and they pushed the Warriors. Maybe they get the right matchup in round one and they can win a series. I know a lot of people have been joking that it's going to be the Sixers. I'm not sure about that, but like, I think that just as an offensive player, I think he's already in the top five, like I said a few weeks ago. And now, in order to take that next step, I think it's more about just getting more talent on that roster and getting a true number two for him.
So My thing here is that I think where Halliburton is, what I think he's unquestionably very good at is being an offensive engine and that level of heliocentrism there. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, Halliburton on different teams. I don't know how Halliburton fits onto a team that has other good players, though.
But that's where I disagree, because here's the thing. What? The quick decision-making, you can play him off the ball and have him be a connective piece. He showed it last night. They would kick him the ball, and in a split second, he would be able to read it. It's, there's really only, like, two.
I don't know if there's many other guys in the NBA that can make the decisions at the level that he can with the processing speed. Like, he's just, he processes the game so fast.
That he is just, I think you can play him off the ball. I think you could just put him at the top of the key and let him make decisions.
I just don't think, but here's the thing, is I just don't think that the benefit you get from playing him off the, I mean, maybe we will see when he gets better teammates. I don't think necessarily a five-out team with Miles Turner, who I know he's shooting like, what, 33% from three this year or something like that. He's still a guy who can shoot threes, and they do have shooters at all positions. Like, it's not like this – it's not like he's being handed like the Detroit Pistons. It's not like he's being handed like the, you know, some other like crazy amount of team. I just think there is going to be diminishing returns as you add back to these things, because when you have a guard who can't play on defense, it does compromise you. Not even necessarily in the regular season, but just in the playoffs. I really don't think – I think it's going to be very difficult to be – I think that's why Steph Curry has been the only, like, good guard player who's been, like, the best player on, like, a championship team, like, ever. I think at the end of the day, I think Halliburton can win a championship, but he's going to need to be with another top five guy in the league or something like that. He'd be an awesome number two, but – I don't think that he is a like first team all NBA guy. I think he's more in that, you know.
Well, he is right now. Third team. He is.
I mean,
he's one of the five best players in the NBA this season.
In the regular season, yeah, absolutely. No, but
that's what we're talking about. Point. Too.
With, I guess.
When you don't vote on all NBA after the playoffs.
Do you want to know where? So if we want to go back. I don't know if you remember, the Boston Celtics beat the Bulls 124. They scored 124 points against the Bulls in regulation. They scored 125 against the 76ers in regulation. All of this in the last 2 weeks. Do you know what where they are in offensive rating over the last 2 weeks?
Are you talking about the Celtics?
The Celtics. You know where they are in offensive rating based on those numbers I just gave you? They beat 124 in regulation against the Bulls, 125 in regulation against the Sixers. Those games are included. There were 8 games.
So I'm assuming that their offense hasn't been as good recently. I'll say that they're 6th.
They are 19th in the NBA over the last 2 weeks in offensive rating. They are great pace, but just offensive rating decidedly below average. That, by the way, that 2 weeks is after Kristaps Porzingis went down with injury in that Magic game. Now, the Magic are a good defensive team, so obviously that game, you know, whatever that is. I'm just saying, like, the Pacers, you know, beating the Celtics, quote-unquote holding the Celtics to 112 last night. This Celtics team is just not very good without Porzingis.
Sam, CJ said in the comments that you need to speed up your voice to get the Ben Shapiro effect.
You will. I mean,
have you looked at the offensive rate? If you've looked at his Darko chart, actually,
hold on. I will say that I was owned in one way. I mean, I think Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum had like fine games last night. The Celtics losing was, you know, the Pacers guards were cooking Derek White and Drew Holiday, who are, you know, pretty substantial defensive backcourt. But I would pump the brakes about crowning Halliburton this many games into the season. He'll probably make all NBA in some form. I don't know if I'm ready to name him second best guard in the NBA behind Steph Curry or Luka or whoever.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
if you want to take everything into account and you're including Luka as a guard, I would still take Luka over him. I would still take Booker over him. I would still take Steph over him, and I would still take SGA over him. Having said that, I think that I said this a few weeks ago. I think he's a top with the importance of the offense in the modern NBA. I think he's a top five offensive player, and I think he's a top 12 player in the NBA now. And I think that if you were to rank out the guys, like the Ringer did their ranking that was released today, and he was 12th on the list. And I think that's completely reasonable. Like, they have 127 offensive rating when he's on the court. Now, so, like I said, some of that is their style of play. Some of that is the fact they don't play defense. Another part of that is just the fact that he's good at basically every facet of offense, and he can be a lead creator. I think you can play him off the ball. Like, the thing with that, calling him Helio, it doesn't, like, when I think of Helio, I think of peak LeBron. I think of Luka. I think of Harden. I think of guys who dominate the ball, and largely rightfully so, because they're incredible offensive talents that can't be stopped as scorers and playmakers. When I think of Haliburton, like I said a few weeks ago, I think of him more like a Jokic type, where, like, you can play him off the ball and have him make split decisions in a quick second, having him running around the perimeter, cutting to the basket, finding guys in a split second, in a way that, it's not to say that he's better than any of the guys that I just listed, but in a way that is just different than those guys. And I think that you can build a system as they get more talented to make this team at least a conference finals level team. Like, he's that level of talent to me. And I think that the defensive stuff certainly could be an issue, but as we've seen with a lot of these hyper efficient offensive guys who could play on and off the ball, sometimes they can lift up lesser offensive players, and you might be able to acquire defensive talent to cover up for some of that stuff. And I think that that would be the path that I would go if I were them. I would not be looking to acquire Lauri Markkanen or do what the Kings did in the reverse of this trade and get a Sabonis in there. I would be trying to acquire a Pascal Siakam. I would be trying to acquire a Mikal Bridges. I would be trying to acquire talent that is defensive focused, that might be able to be uplifted around a very good, talented offensive engine that in the half court and in the full court is incredibly effective. Someone said in the comments, rank Luka, Trey, Halley on defense. I'll be honest, Halley, when he's a bad defender, and I honestly think that because of Trey's tools, even though Trey tries a little bit more on defense now, because of Trey's lack of tools, I would have to put him towards the bottom.
Trey's last. Yeah.
In a playoff series like that actually has guys that can exploit that, it's going to be exploited over and over and over again. I'd probably... Luka with me is almost always a lack of just him not giving a shit.
He doesn't care.
When he cares, I think he's fine. Like, he's like he's like a Harden level guy on defense.
Right.
And then I think Halley's probably in the middle of those two. Having said that, I still think that I think due to his lack of like the fact that Halley has good tools on defense and can cause turnovers at the very least, he does get steals, he could have some pathway to becoming a neutral defender in the perfect situation, I think. And that's where I think if you take a little bit of the offensive load off of him, you get him some more defensive talent around him, I think that they really can make some noise. Now, I'm still going to be a little bit skeptical that this style of play can win multiple playoff series, because I think it's all matchup dependent. And I think that the Kings showed it last year. And I think that, honestly, that Kings team had more offensive talent than this Pacers team does. I know that they were able to turn it up a little bit last night on defense. I still don't trust their defense in a playoff series against a team with a good coach that can scheme for that. And I think that, and just good talent on the other end, but I think that they're going to be an issue. And I do think that Haliburton is, like I said, like, I think he's the 12th best player in the NBA right now at a minimum.
Yeah. I agree with that right now. That's like a totally different subject from like sixth man in the NBA, Tyrese Haliburton, which is like what I'm hearing today, which is what's making me roll my eyes.
Yeah. I'm not putting him over Booker and Tatum and all the guys that have proven it time and time again in the playoffs. Like, I'm not willing to go that far, but there's a path for him to get to that level for sure.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I'm I honestly, and I'm going to be accused of pandering. I would still take Tyrese Maxey in a playoff series over Tyrese Haliburton. So, because at least Tyrese Maxey is strong, and I've seen him be strong. I know he has his own defensive issues, but like, he's been strong. I've seen him be an impact player in the postseason, and more importantly, I've seen him play with good players and be good. So I will just, you know, that's all I'm going to say. I mean, maybe it, yeah, Tyrese Haliburton, someone asked how he could prove it to me. Somebody else answered for me in the comments. If he beats the Miami Heat in a playoff series and looks awesome, that's it. He's there. He's there. And I will take the L, but can I see it first? Can I see it, Alex?
I was going to say to you, what's going to be Bill's insane overreaction to all this? And someone said in the comments last night that he was going to say, I felt like I was watching Steph Curry in 2014.
That's going to be it. That's going to be it, because there are similarities.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like there's not the fact that he's slight and bad on, because Steph used to be pretty bad on defense too, back in the day, especially when Steph was coming up. Steph had more injury concerns, and I think always had like kind of a higher ceiling, but like early Steph was the engine that made things go. He had the gravity on the 3-point shooting, and he had the passing, and, you know, made the quick decisions and did all of this stuff. The cutting too, I think is something that they both share in common that I think is really important about some of that stuff. That said, Steph Curry is the greatest. The rest of our lives, we're never going to see a shooter as good as Steph Curry. Right?
Yeah, I mean, comparing anyone to Steph is a fool's errand. Yeah. Like it's almost always going to have you fall flat on your face. But
it's him and Sam Hauser. Those are the only two guys.
Exactly. When you talk about shooters, when you talk about, you know, just that level of gravity, you know, Neesmith's gravity is number one.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Shout out to Aaron Neesmith, who owned us, by the way. That's owned. We traded him for fucking Malcolm Brogdon and Daniel Theis. Imagine house if we hadn't done that.
I was saying you park this kid in the corner. He needs to be out there running around. He's a garbage man house, but he's good at it.
I'll put over under. He's gonna have to tell some story about his dad being furious with Neesmith for not being good on the Celtics and being good when he goes somewhere else. Nobody takes that more personal than like fucking Boston sports fans when like we are the beneficiaries of it, like especially with the Patriots for like a billion years, and it's like, shut the fuck up. Like who are you to complain? We really are the whiniest babies. Yeah, we are the whiniest babies. It's
dads love to do that though. My dad will text me every once in a while when a former Sixer has a good game, and he'll be like, oh, did you see George Niang had 5 threes the other night? And I'm like, okay. I think we'll be fine without George Niang.
I think we're okay, man.
Yeah. But
I also didn't watch the game last night. I was reading feminist literature. Sylvia Plath, The Bell Jar. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that now. Well, I'll let you finish what you were saying, Jordan.
What I was going to say was someone in the comments said the Sixers could have had Haliburton for Ben Simmons. Look, I never got confirmation whether that was actually on the table or not.
It was leading up to it, and then I have other people that tell me that it was never on the table, and that he was the player that was offered for Ben Simmons was De'Aaron Fox, and it wasn't because they would have wanted to put Ben Simmons and Haliburton together with the Kings. I honestly have no idea. Some people say that neither of them were ever on the table, and it was just Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and picks. So I really don't know what the reality of that situation was. Having said that, there are so many teams, and I know that there are so many fan bases out there that are just in piss and shit over the fact that they did not acquire this guy, either at the draft or when he was potentially available via trade. Like, there was a Kings-Sixers game in 2022, so it was almost 2 years ago at this point, in January, where Haliburton had like 37 points and like 12 assists against the Sixers. And I remember saying to people like, well, That's it. We're not getting Halliburton anymore. No team would be stupid enough to trade this 22-year-old who just put up all of these crazy points. And then a real twist of the knife last night was the fact that the Kings lost in the in-season tournament with both Sabonis and Fox struggling at parts in that game. And obviously it's just like Will was talking about his friend who sent us the letter the DM about comparing the Halliburton trade to 9/11. Saying the more you looked into the more you think about the Kings, the more it makes sense. The more you look into, you know, American interventionism and imperialism around the world, 9/11 actually, you know, it's terrible, but you understand a little bit more why it happened.
Yeah.
And he was saying that last year, even through all of the Beam team and they're making it back to the playoffs and all the excitement around the Kings, he could just never get happy because anytime you watch Halliburton, he was like, how could we ever trade a dude this good?
So in this analogy, Monty McNair is Osama bin Laden, then. is what I'm hearing.
So wait, that was no. Oh yeah, is he Osama or is he George W. Bush? Because he was the one who deserved it.
Because he's the one he masterminded the same room, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was an inside job.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So yeah. who's to say? That also makes Nick Stauskas the Muha Shadid, where he's kind of, you know, the what happened beforehand.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of blowback going on still all these years later.
Yeah, the meeting between the Bin Ladens and the Bushes that happened. That was actually George Niang FaceTiming Tyrese Halliburton to be like, did you get traded to the Sixers?
Yeah. Right. Papa Giannis was the rise of Al-Qaeda. There's a lot of... he's Pakistani intelligence. Never mind.
Okay. Yes, sure.
Yeah. So, it's it really is something else. It does suck that Kings fans, even when they win, they generationally definingly lose. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This really is the fucking Kawhi Leonard Paul George trade all over again. Like, where it's initially like, wow, win-win. What a good trade for everybody.
Kawhi Leonard, George Hill, not
George Paul Hill, George. Sorry.
Not I was going to say Paul George, but that would be a pretty even trade.
Yeah, it probably would, actually, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. It really is something else, though, that, like, it's like the opposite of they can't keep getting away with it. Like, this can't keep happening to them.
Exactly.
And yet it does.
And honestly, I'd be lying if I said that I ever saw Halliburton getting this good. Like, I'm when that trade went down, I was not for it. If you go back and listen to those episodes, I was like, I wouldn't have traded this kid for Sabonis, because I'm not a big Sabonis guy and I don't understand it. And then as they played more games, it made a little bit more sense. Okay, you see the whatever. And now, like I said at the time, I was not for the trade, but I didn't see him getting to the point where he's an all NBA guy. I think on those podcasts, I said, I think that his ceiling was like a lower end all-star. Like, that's where I was like, and I was like, oh, we could get Halliburton and Maxey, who probably both peak as lower end all-stars.
Yeah.
And now, 2 years later, I'm like, okay, I was completely wrong about both of these dudes. They've completely surpassed my expectations. And by the way, they're only 24 and 23 years old. So, Halliburton, look, some people want to call him the best pacer ever already, because they don't really have a long history. It's really just Reggie Miller and Paul George.
Like, I was just gonna say, Paul George. People forget about Paul George, man. young Paul George was the best player on a team that, you know, was never close, but was definitely belonged on the same court as those Miami teams.
They took him to seven,
six, I think.
No, I think they took him to seven 1 year.
Was it
seven?
Was it?
Am I wrong here?
I thought it was six. It was game six.
They played them in the conference finals. Which,
yes, I think that was minimum. Six games. Yeah.
Which any Sixers fan would kill for, because the Kings and the Nets have made the conference finals more recently than we have. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure they took them to seven year.
I'll find it out.
I think it was the Lance Stevenson when he blew in LeBron's ear.
LeBron's ear.
It was that year. I think that was in a game seven, but maybe I'm wrong. But either way, best pacer ever has been the conversation.
It was seven, right?
Yeah. The Reggie Miller conversation, as they had on Bill's podcast, as some people have been having, as a regular season player, I think Halliburton already has an argument for best pacer ever. Like, he's going to be one of the 15 best players in the NBA. They've only had two other guys who have reached those heights at a point in their career. He's going to potentially be has Paul George made a first team All-NBA? I don't know if he has. I think Paul, he peaked at second team. I think second team was the highest he ever got.
He might, if he did, it was when he was younger. It was like before he broke his leg. So I'll find that.
Oh, he did. He was third in MVP voting one year. So it's possible he made it that year, but that was with OKC. That was not with the Pacers. So, I'm curious, because the argument for Halley as the best pacer ever, which, to be fair, he's on that trajectory, but as a playoff riser and a player who was able to get super far into the playoffs in the 90s against the Bulls, Reggie Miller was a baller in the playoffs. So it's hard for me in the regular season, I think that Halliburton will clear him. In the playoffs, it's yet to be seen, but the trajectory is right there.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about that, that's the thing I always come back to, is it's so hard for me to like rate guys by like regular season. I immediately jump to like playoffs and what they're going to be. And Paul George just, what young Paul George did was so impressive to me, like where he was so fucking young. He's going toe to toe with literally the best version of LeBron there ever was.
Yep.
Like, I know he was really good with the Cavs, but I still think those Heat LeBron were like, was the best there ever was. And I think those might've been the best LeBron teams, were those, you know, post Shane Battier like teams. And, you know, he had fucking, like, you go back and you look at like who was on his team at the time. I was like, man, the star-studded Pacers roster. You got David West. You got Roy Hibbert. All the guys.
Wasn't Tyler Hansborough? Was he a bench player on those teams?
I think he was like the seventh man.
But I think that Bill used this as an example of
DJ Augustine, Jan Mahimny, Sam Young, Gerald Green. Like,
yeah, these teams that made conference finals back then, that if you put them in today's NBA would be like a play-in team, is basically what he was saying when he was talking about like your average team that made a conference finals back then was like so much weaker than it is now. Just like every night, I mean, you just see it every fucking night in the NBA where it's just a random dude. Patrick Beverley the other night just had like fucking against the Celtics had like, what did he finish that game with? Like 25 and like 8-8 or something. Had like a LeBron stat line in a random game, and he's 35 years old. It's just crazy the offensive talent that exists in the contemporary NBA. But I think that Halliburton obviously has to show a little bit more in the playoffs for sure. He hasn't been there before. He needs to get there and prove it. But I think he will, and I think he's going to end up, if not the best pacer ever, in the same tier as those other guys. Like he's doing some crazy shit for a 24-year-old. And I you know, Paul George obviously did the same thing, but the East was way weaker back then. We'll see what the Pacers are able to do over these next few years.
Yeah, I just all the inflation numbers, though, I also think has us overestimating how good these young players are. Because like all of these young players are like putting up these numbers on paces that are like unheard of. But by the way, number one, prime suspect number one in this is fucking Jason Tatum, who is like on every all-time list, like in terms of playoff totals and numbers, but just because he's like been in there at a young age. But like, it just, everybody scores that much now, you know, like
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree that there needs to be some sort of way to like adjust, but even for, and like I've said it 100 times, they have more possessions than any team in the NBA so far this year. Like, they just don't play defense. They always get out running. It's going to inflate the stats a little bit. If you look at the per 100 stats, it balances out a little bit. Guys like Embiid and Jokic are still way ahead of him when it comes to like points and stuff like that. But the numbers just by themselves, even in the contemporary NBA, are pretty mind-blowing if you look at Halliburton stats. Like, I know that it is something that we need to adjust our brains to, but he is putting up some fucking crazy ass numbers. And when you watch the game, it feels like he has an incredible impact on the game offensively. Like, it's not like some sort of like cognitive dissonance between the numbers and what you watch.
Somebody just had a good comparison in the comments. I kind of like the Nash comparison for him.
Yeah. Will's been saying that it's the 7 seconds or less Suns.
And I kind of like that comparison because Steve Nash, famous player, like that's my concern, but like about Halliburton's like being like a playoff performer is the Steve Nash stuff. You know what I'm saying? Where ultimately you aren't totally in control of your debt. Like, you're obviously a very good player. You don't take a lot off the table. You kind of can this high floor offense pretty much single-handedly. But I think, I worry about that in the playoffs, I guess is what I'm going to say. He's going to need significant
I'll say this much, though.
And I think if he's going to win a championship, he's going to need, like, a really good teammate at some point who's better than him.
Are they he's not better than him. I disagree. Is there anyone in the East that mirrors the mid to late 2000 Spurs? Because that's who Steve Nash would had to lose against. They lost against every year in the playoffs. Pushed them multiple times, but never beat them. And like that team, they had peak Duncan. They had
That's the difference. I was gonna say the Celtics, but the Celtics don't have anyone like peak Duncan. So
yeah, and which is their problem. You know, you had Manu, Parker. Those teams were loaded with talent. That's the thing is that we'll have to see what kind of speed bump that they could potentially run into in this East over the next 5 years.
I also don't know how, like they would clearly be like very good, the Spurs, like right now, but like I wonder again, the talent is just so crazy in the NBA now too. So
yeah, I mean, the Pacers could easily lose in the first round too. Like they could run into the wrong matchup and lose in the first round, and you know, but they got some time though. They certainly have some time.
I'm fascinated. I hope we get Pacers Knicks, like a 4-5 Pacers.
That would be an interesting matchup.
That's the one I really want to see. I want to see this Pacers team play the Knicks or play the Heat, because I think in both of those, everyone would be like Pacers. Like, I think the Pacers would be the hot, like, upset pick, and I think that the reality of playoff basketball would, like, bring that all back to earth a little bit. That said, the Knicks could also go Julius Randle mode, and the Heat Devil Magic could finally run out, and the Pacers could also just destroy them. So
we'll see, because they beat the Heat without Halliburton the other night, but Bam also didn't play in that game. So they're two best players, many are saying now.
Yeah.
So just real quick before we move on, list of teams who passed on Halliburton that haven't fully recovered: the Bulls, Pistons, Wizards, and Knicks. You know, look, the Knicks still won a playoff series. It's probably not fair to lump them in with the Pistons, Wizards, and Bulls, obviously. But man, it would be real nice, especially because the Pacers now have. Oh, the Suns also passed on them, but the Suns and the Warriors, obviously. But the Warriors won a title since, and the Suns have been to the NBA Finals. So, and they still have incredible talent throughout the roster.
God, the thing is that the thing about the Warriors one though is like everybody said this would be great.
Everyone, it was such a
perfect everyone fit. Said that. Everyone said that, and like it's like wow, literally all they have to do is trade back, and they were like too hyped up on their own genius juice. Like
no, yeah, that is really really tough. Obviously, they whiffed on two straight
drafts. I was going to say, Franz. They fucked it up again with Franz.
Going 0-3 is really what killed them. If they hit on one of those dudes, whether it was Şengün, Franz, or Halliburton, or LaMelo, or whoever, they would have been sitting nice right now. But, you know, that's the way the cookie crumbles.
I do like that right now we're getting the fucking Giannis tour of, like, unnamed NBA executives being like, we really liked Halliburton. We were like right there.
Garpax was going to draft him if he didn't get fired.
Yeah.
That's what we were earlier. I was like, sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if I got fired, I would also say that I was going to draft Halliburton.
Yeah. Also, if I were to pick in 2011, I would have picked Kawhi. I would have picked Jokic in the first round at the end of the 2014 draft.
Yeah.
I would have drafted all the players.
I would have drafted Draymond to go with Jokic. Like, I would have everyone who's been, I would have drafted Bane. I would have drafted all of these guys, man. Like, at the end of the first, Jimmy Butler. I would have drafted Jimmy Butler.
Maxi. So, I actually would have drafted Maxi, though. The Maxi and Bane one isn't a bit. I would have drafted both of them. You can go back and look at my Twitter from 2020 when I was like, 2021, not quite as lucky with the late round sleepers, but 2020, I was locked in, folks. So yeah, that's brutal. Question before we move on to the next topic. Do you think that Tatum's Mickey Mouse player of the month motivated Tyrese Haliburton last night?
Certainly didn't motivate Jason Tatum.
That was really unbelievable that he won. I was like, I don't even think he was a top three player in the East this month.
Can I say this is like the worst he's been in like 5 years? like I'm not kidding. Like I'm like way. I'm obviously ridiculous about Jason Tatum, and sometimes I get a little bit. The thing that's been consistent throughout is the guiding north light that throughout Jason Tatum's career that has disproved me is the simple fact of like his on offs are always fucking incredible. He's always lock him in. He's always one of like the five best plus minus guys in the NBA every single year. Bang, bang, bang. No matter how good his team is, they are negative with him on the floor. Like
they might not be after crazy. Last night. I think that he might have balanced that out a little bit last night, but it's certainly it's by far his worst in terms of on-offs.
It's an insane thing. It really is kind of crazy. One thing I love about going back through the 2020 NBA draft, even with Aaron Nesmith being the player that he is that Celtics could have drafted literally any of like, with two exceptions, any of the next like 14 guys, and it would have been a better play than Aaron Nesmith.
Cole Anthony, Quickly, McDaniels, yep. Maxi, Bane. There was a lot of guys. Even Sadiq Bey, like he probably would have played more for you guys.
Even Precious, Josh Green, even
no Beef Precious, Stew, Precious, man. Precious things, dude.
Guess what?
I'll give you the other ones, but I've watched a little bit of the Raptors and I've seen some clips going around of Precious, and oh boy, he's been real bad this year.
Man, the Devin Vassell picks gotta hurt.
I mean, look, hold on. Hear me out here. If you get Haliburton, you're probably too good to get Wemby.
I guess.
Would you rather have Hallie or Wembis?
You could have had Chet, the better player.
Would they have been bad enough to get Chet though?
They should have been. Because you would have taken the. Man, I don't know. It's hard to
figure out. No, because they had like that's seventh like pick of that draft. Yeah,
it's too far back. It's 3 years. Yeah. Like you have no idea. Like they would have. Do they trade Poeltl earlier? You know what I'm saying? Because that's what would have had to happen. You know, so.
They had too much competent. Haliburton was pretty good instantly. Like he wasn't like an all-star, but he was like a starter level player as a rookie. So like by year two or three, you probably would have been like, shit, if we want to get another one of these top picks, we got to be like, they traded DeJounte Murray and DeMar DeRozan and all those guys because they wanted to get a Wemby level guy. So.
God damn, dude. It is crazy how the top like 10 of this draft is two really good guys, and then the other eight, like, well, I guess besides Vassell, like the next 20 had like all these really good guys. Like that is an insane draft from like the amount of talent that's available starting at like 10 or 11 to like the back of the first round is insane in that draft.
My favorite is when Bill just chalks it up to being the COVID draft and gives everyone an excuse. I'm like, that's like the worst excuse. We had 7 months for that draft.
What were you doing?
Into the draft. Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, no, I'm literally, I probably researched that draft more than any other draft we've ever had.
That draft was draft Twitter's like big fucking, that was the best they've ever been.
Yeah. And they were nailed it.
And that was because they, I think it was because none of them could fucking do anything else.
Yeah.
They're stuck like watching this shit. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No, they
notable exception Ant, but like I think we all got Ant wrong. Like
if you were to go back and look at like they do the average draft Twitter board though, from that draft, like the cumulative, if you look at the top seven, it was like literally the seven best players from that draft. It was like, Ant, LaMelo, not in the perfect order, but like LaMelo, Ant, Maxey, Bane, Vassell, Halliburton. Like it was, it's crazy to see how well that has aged for draft Twitter. But that's why. You're right.
So what we have to do is we have to steal all the draft Twitter people. Mm-hmm. You have to like, you have to put them in a room, not let them leave, tell them a pandemic is out. You basically have to do Fallout. Do Fallout to the draft Twitter, and they will give you a perfect board every year. So
there you go. Just put them away from society and just give them clips.
The draft Twitter cannot eat. They cannot sleep. Yeah. They cannot see their loved ones. They must only work.
Yes. We're going to lock them in the Matthew McConaughey room in Interstellar and say, find me the perfect prospect.
Yeah. Draft Twitter. They're still watching. Yeah. They're still watching the Warriors draft Wiseman. No!
Smashing on the glass.
Smashing on the glass. No!
Wait! But Halliburton's the perfect pit!
No! No! Oh, God.
So, okay. Now we have to talk about the other Celtics game. I'm sorry, Sam. We have to talk about another Celtics game that happened.
Okay.
Which was the Sixers-Celtics from Friday night. A game that I admit I was not locked in for that game. I didn't even want to watch it once I found out that Maxey, Embiid, and Batum were all out. I was like, you know what? If this game is close in the second half, I'll tune in. Otherwise, I'm going to watch some television and just hang out. So I tuned in after halftime because the game was very close. And the Sixers, led by Patrick Beverley, as I said, D'Anthony Melton, and the corpse of Marcus Morris and Robert Covington, who's been very good for the Sixers so far this year, almost knocked off your Celtics at home. Jason Tatum gets thrown out in the fourth quarter. And the thing that I came out of that game thinking was the Sixers can beat the Celtics, but they either need to trade Tobias Harris or he needs to sprain his ankle for 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that was the worst I've ever seen Tobias. He was definitely the reason they lost that game. It was very bad.
You have defended Tobias in the past, and not even you can defend Tobias. No. That was...
he was actually bad that game. He was the reason they lost. Like, there's no argument about that. Like, everybody else was good. Melton was kind of amazing. Despite, like, two other rough games in the other times they played the Celtics. I thought he might have even been the Sixers' best player. Paul Reed had a lot going on in that game. I just think this was a disgusting act of skullduggery and malfeasance by the 76ers to try to artificially manufacture a trap game is what I don't like about that.
A rat game, if you will.
Yeah, as I would say, this was the mouse trap rat game. That was because I know the Celtics would have won by 20 if everybody had played. But it almost worked too. It almost worked. The disgusting poor sportsmanship of faking illnesses and injuries. By the way, could we talk about the fact that COVID is definitely just going around the NBA where all of a sudden it's not known COVID illnesses, just everyone is illness. Don't ask which one.
They're sick.
Yeah. Everyone's sick. Don't worry about it. Are they playing? Okay, who knows?
Look, I love to, randomly get sick, not be allowed around my teammates, be stuck in a hotel. All of my teammates are getting sick. Apparently, they did say that it was a non-COVID illness eventually, but at first when they start listing these guys as illness and then they don't say anything, it does feel very convenient that it feels like a lot of pretty much everyone in the Sixers.
Every team has guys being sick over the last 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
Right, so after Thanksgiving. It's just a coincidence. Yes.
Yeah. Who's to say?
Yeah, exactly. Who's to
say what happened there? Yeah. Who knows?
But coming out of that game, I was frustrated with Tobias's play, especially because, like, you have two straight games without Embiid. And this is actually where Tobias in the past has been a very useful, nice player for the Sixers to have, because he can do the fake star thing and go off for 25 points in a random game when we're playing the Pistons or the Wizards or whoever is on the schedule. He happened to have to do this during a tough part of the schedule when they're playing the Timberwolves and the Pelicans and the Celtics. And when you have Patrick Beverley and Marcus Morris and all of these guys outperforming you in a game against a team that you have historically struggled against as a scorer, especially the play where he got blocked at the rim twice by Al Horford. It's hard for me to see a series where Tobias Harris is playing 35 minutes a game and the Sixers having enough ancillary skill guys, because the reason why Robert Covington was so good in this game is because he had five steals. And DeAnthony Melton was so good in this game was because he put up a volume of threes. And why guys are more effective against the Celtics is because a lot of the role players the Sixers have now are similar to the role players that the Heat have had over the past few years in terms of being athletic guys who can cause turnovers and get the team out running and make the right decisions with the ball on offense, like when Batum is healthy, and have an injection of athleticism on the wing. And now that the Sixers have a plentiful depth of playable wings, it feels like Tobias's point on this team, there really is none. Like it feels like when the shot is not falling from three, he doesn't do things to affect the game positively enough for the Sixers really to win a series against a high-level playoff team when they're playing him 35 minutes a game, specifically the Celtics, which seemed to be a nightmare matchup for both Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris. So my whole thing on this is I think that they need to seriously explore trading him, and I don't think that they will at this deadline. Everything that I've heard is that is not smoke. When Jake Fisher says that they view the core as Melton, Tobias, Embiid and Maxey right now, I think that that is true. I think that they view the other contracts that they have as with Marcus Morris and with Daniel House and Furkan Korkmaz and all those guys, they view that as their way to upgrade this roster before the deadline. And then next summer is where they'll revisit the Tobias conversation, whether they re-sign him or let him go in free agency. And I think that it's just a mistake, to be honest with you. I think that we've seen this Tobias thing through plenty of times, and I think that he doesn't really fit this roster. And if you want to beat the Celtics, you need to have guys like that were playing the other night, and Rocco and Melton, and I think they need to get more minutes. And even Oubre, who's a better on-ball defender and athlete. Like, I'm skeptical that the Sixers, with Joel Embiid as the best player and Tobias Harris is one of the high-minute guys, will be able to beat the Celtics in a playoff series. That's just kind of how I feel.
Yeah, I mean, well, especially because I think what's happened is, yeah, like you said, Robert Covington and Nick Batum have kind of made him redundant, because I like the idea of Tobias Harris, because guys with his size and ability to play on the wing and be like good, you know, be like medium to good, like starter level good, that's actually pretty rare in the NBA. But then part of the brilliance of the Clippers trade was they happened to trade with like one of the only other teams in the NBA that just had like two of those guys just kind of kicking around. And, you know, they don't need the ball in their hands, and they kind of fit as like a perfect complement to the Sixers. I'm looking around. I'm trying to figure out if there's a Jazz Warriors Sixers trade where you send Tobias to the Warriors for the Chris Paul contract and you get of the flotsam from the Jazz or something.
Now keep in mind, I think that if there was a player the Sixers really liked that became available, and they either viewed that player as a perfect fit with Maxey and Embiid, a third star level player, or a guy who's completely redundant with Tobias, that they would consider moving on from Tobias. They won't do a trade that's like that. They won't do a trade that's like, we just get Chris Paul's contract and we get off the Tobias money. Like
you don't get the Chris Paul contract. You would get like Kelly Olynyk and Dale Earnhardt Tucker.
I don't think they'd do anything like that. Like everything I've heard, and Sixers fans get mad at me for saying this, but like, this is what I have heard, is that they view the other contracts that are expiring as the way to improve this team. And I think that they view the Tobias thing as like, unless they get a player that is, like I said, completely redundant, whether it's OG Anunoby or Pascal Siakam, which I don't think is likely because of everything we've talked about with the Raptors, or like they from everything I've heard, they have no interest in Zach LaVine. Like they don't view Zach LaVine as a huge upgrade on this roster. They don't like his contract, and they don't really have an interest in acquiring a player like that at this deadline. As I said, I think that these things can change as time moves on, but I think that they know that Joel is sick of all these moving parts all the time on this roster, and they want to try to have like a normal semblance of a core, whether it's, you know, moving forward with Tobias and having him sign an extension this offseason, or it's revisiting it in the offseason. That I have a hard time seeing them trade him at this deadline. It would have to be like, I think it would have to be like an OG Anunoby level player for them to consider moving on. Or like, I suggested on the Patreon episode that they could trade for Jeremy Grant. I don't think that they would try to acquire Jeremy Grant based on what I've heard. I think it would have to be like a Mikal Bridges or an OG Anunoby, and I don't see either of those guys becoming available.
How about Kelly Olynyk, Talen Horton-Tucker, and Lauri Markkanen?
Well, okay.
For so, all the picks.
Well, that's the thing, is that,
yeah,
I think Lauri Markkanen could be a player that can change a lot of teams' plans. I think that a lot of teams that like their team right now might be like, all right, how can we get Lauri Markkanen, right?
Mm-hmm.
I still think that they would just be like, here's Marcus Morris and all the picks, because they can just match on salary with just him, and we'll just take Lauri Markkanen back. Now, maybe they do view Tobias and him as redundant because they both play the 3-4 or whatever, and they change their mind. But I don't know. That might be something that they would have to revisit if he became available. But like I said, I think the level of player that would have to become available is Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, and then Lauri might be considered in that tier.
That's fair. I was going to say, I didn't think about that he does make such little money that, yeah, it's almost an exactly perfect match, Marcus Morris to Lauri Markkanen.
Well, that's so what funny. I was saying is like, yeah, that's a Morey move where you trade, yeah, for, that's a Morey where, yeah, you trade for a player that's on a really good contract that, mm-hmm, is someone who can fit with a lot of different lineups because of his shooting ability and his size, and a guy who is going to bring you a star level impact on low usage. Like that is, mm-hmm, that's the kind of guy. But like I said, I think that it would have to be Lauri Markkanen, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges level player to become available for the Sixers to consider moving on from Tobias. Like, I don't think it would be for like a Gordon Hayward or like a Zach LaVine, or like even a Jeremy Grant. I don't think that they would view it as enough of an upgrade over Tobias, even though Grant's a much better shooter and athlete, that they would basically say, we're good rolling with Tobias and making and seeing if they can get him on a value tradable contract next offseason. The one guy I've thought of, and I don't think this is realistic to be completely honest, because I don't think the Sixers would be interested in him, but Harrison Barnes has been like kind of terrible for the Kings to start the year, and he just signed a 3-year $54 million deal. Man. I don't know if he's, I honestly think Tobias is just better than him now, which is weird because I've always, yeah, felt that they were kind of the same level of player. Mm-hmm. But he's really struggled this year. The other guy that I thought, I think it's unbelievable. I think it's not believable that they would kind of pursue this guy, but I actually think that Kyle Kuzma's contract is really good. And I know that sounds weird because it's felt like he got a lot of money. His salary in 3 years from now is 11% of the cap.
Let's go.
Winger. I kind of think that winger might be, and it's also at its highest point right now. So for matching, it's at like $23 million right now, but it goes down in a few years to like $17 million, I think. And like I said, that's 11% of the cap in a few years.
It's something much to consider. I think it's got to be teams like the Jazz and the Wizards who have no illusions about what they are and where they are in their rebuild. I think you named like two of the teams, because I think that the Raptors are not being honest with themselves about where they are at in their rebuild. And I don't think OG Anunoby is. I don't think the Nets are less like not fooling. The Nets are just kind of good. I don't understand why the Nets would,
They're star hunting. I think that they're, and that's what I think that the Sixers view those draft picks, and they view the cap space this summer as the way, like, if they're spending these picks, I think they're more likely to make a marginal upgrade to get a Spencer Dinwiddie for seconds as a ball handling bench guard, to get some of these guys that are on the lower end for potentially second round picks, or maybe one of the not great firsts that the Sixers have. Mm-hmm. Or heavily protecting that, than they are to make a big splash before this deadline, because the team is really good. And they probably say, we can always get that star, or, like I said, high-level impact role player like OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, guys that they might view as a star-level impact guy that are more suited for role player stuff as well. And I think that move will come next summer, because they can have five first-round picks next year. And I think they're more likely to make kind of, like I said, like a pivot move with the expiring contracts. They can pretty much trade for any player still, even without including Tobias's expiring. They can pretty much trade for any player, because Marcus Morris, Furkan Korkmaz, KJ Martin, and Daniel House can get you to $30 million in expirings. So that's money. That's the majority of players in the NBA. There's only a few guys, like Levine's the only one they can't trade for if they decide not to trade Tobias, basically. And I don't think they have any interest in him to begin with. Someone said DeMar and Caruso for Tobias and a pick in the comments. I think the Bulls want two firsts. And I'm going to be honest, I like Alex Caruso a lot. I think it's ridiculous that he could go for two first round picks. I think we've just gotten way too crazy with the role player stuff. Like, how many teams is he, like, look, is he one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA? Absolutely. He also shoots like 28% from three in the playoffs. And like, I know he's shooting well right now, and he could, in the right situation, if you're a Denver or a Warriors team and you can acquire him, maybe even like a Pacers that has an offensive engine that can work off the ball, there's a lot of movement and stuff. I don't see him making as much of an impact on the championship race as people make it out to be. I think that Caruso's gotten a little bit overrated, just personally. Like, I wouldn't give up two first round picks. If I did, it would have to be like two first round picks, like what the Knicks have, that are like kind of fake first round picks.
Picturing Danny Ainge and the entire Utah Jazz front office doing the Tom Hanks in the Elvis movie. He's white. He's white. that gif over and over again. What if they zig when they should zag? Yeah, I don't know. Somebody, the Bulls have to sell, right? This offseason, like even more than last year. That's the thing, is even more than, like, we were talking about it last year. Like, how are these teams not selling? Nobody is selling. You can get a king's ransom.
Yeah,
even more this year. Like there's like not bad. Even the Blazers like aren't like god awful, you know what I'm saying? Like, they like win games like every once in a while, and like are intriguing, and they probably want to keep like some of these good young players. Like, the Grizzlies have Ja coming back at some point and probably at least want to see what that looks like in 10 games or whatever that is. Like, there's not really, the Clippers are in too deep. They're like a fucking mob movie. They're fucking Scorsese right now, drowning in the fucking the third act of Goodfellas. They're trying to flush the cocaine down the toilet, like, in the fucking other room. Like,
which is very appropriate for their transaction history as well.
So, like, I just don't think anybody is, like, nobody's selling. Like, the Wizards are going to sell. The Danny Ainge will probably sell. Who else is going to sell? Like, I don't trust Masai, and the Bulls should sell. Am I sure they're going to? No.
I think the Bulls' version of selling is trading Zach LaVine for whatever they can get, which I think is going to be way underwhelming and not nearly as much as he would have commanded on the market a year ago when they should have sold. And I think that it's also going to be trading DeMar, who honestly, I just spent a whole thing talking about how I don't trust Tobias. I would rather have Tobias than DeMar, not even a question in my mind. Like, DeMar is not shooting well this year, and that has been his whole bread and butter the last 4 or 5 years. He's not the same level of athlete that he was 5 years ago. He's always been a bad defender. I know he's shooting like a career high from three, but it's really just wide open corner threes that he's taking. I don't trust DeMar in a playoff series if I'm trying to acquire someone that can swing for the title race. And I guess Caruso would be the only other guy that they realistically could trade. But like, if you've watched the games without LaVine, they play more like connective basketball, and they are doing like the ball movement thing, and they're winning games. I know it's been two games, but like, I could see themselves talking themselves into keeping Alex Caruso at this deadline, which I think if there's a 2 first-round pick deal for Alex Caruso out there, you would be insane to do that. But I think that that is the reality that the Bulls kind of live in their own delusions, which is that we don't want to lose. And it's like, well, you don't have a choice. You suck. Like, and you've burned all the shit you could have used to get this team to be even a play-in level team, and you're going to miss the play-in. So that's kind of where I'm at with the Bulls, where like, I think they miss their window to do these trades. And I think that if they do end up doing these trades, that they could botch it again.
I still think they should do the trades. I think you just got to tear it down to the studs, man. I think you got to do the roster churn thing to just replenish some of these assets. Cause like, there is nothing. It's a bleak roster, man. It's a really bleak roster.
Like, Kobe White's look good.
He's okay. Kobe White's okay, but
he's been kind of hooping recently. Patrick Williams has actually been playing normally since Zach LaVine's been out of the lineup. He's had like some of his most high scoring games of the season: 14 points, 16 points.
I love Kev, but it has been very funny to watch him, like his Joker, like transformation to being like a pro Zach anti Pat Williams guy to just completely heel turning on Zach. Like,
you bastard.
Yeah. I know.
I think a lot of Bulls fans feel that way right now, especially because they're winning in the two games that he sat, like, and he's been giving no effort. I think that they all feel kind of, but also you could have avoided all this and traded him on one of the best contracts in the NBA a few years ago. If you wanted to try to make the playoffs like they did a few years ago, that's cool too. But also, like, you knew what you were doing when you signed up to this contract. Like, that's just kind of the reality of the situation.
I don't want to blame them too much for like going for it, because like what happened with Lonzo is like insanely bad luck. It's what they've done since Lonzo got hurt, where you just refuse to let go.
Yes.
Like once Lonzo was done, you had to move on, and they didn't. They like re-signed Vooch. They did all this other like.
Even with Lonzo, like, were they ever winning a playoff series? Like,
no, but like, maybe the Bucks were pretty.
Middleton got hurt. That they actually won the finals that year. Oh no, that was the Celtics. The year they lost to the Celtics, right? When they played the Bulls,
yeah.
But Middleton did get hurt in that series.
Yes.
So. And that team was not very good. By the way, we didn't even talk. We're going to talk a little bit about the Celtics trade. Because did you see the Shams thing today about the Celtics?
No.
He said he expects them to be very active in the trade market at this deadline, which I didn't understand. But is it okay,
Peyton Pritchard's contract? Like, what are they trading?
I think it's
not Jaylen Brown.
Certainly not Jaylen Brown. I was surprised that you hadn't been more mad at Drew over the last few games, because I came out of that Sixers game being like, is Drew better than D'Anthony Melton now?
He's not good, but like, we need a player like that though. Like he's worse than Marcus Smart, but like, what's done is done. Like, we would have been worse with Malcolm Brogdon. So, and Rob Williams not playing, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the Warriors pick might have been better, but like, I don't know. Ideally, you trade Brogdon for Porzingis and you keep Smart. That's like the best option. But like, Drew's been bad. You know what I'm saying? There's no two ways about it. Also, Brogdon would have been worse for this team. I think.
And it's funny because the thing that people keep saying bites the Celtics in the ass is these end of game situations where they melt down or whatever. But if Porzingis is healthy, the idea is that you just run teams off the court. So you don't even have to get to that. Because you don't even have to be in those moments, which that's, they were that's doing.
Yeah. And it's looked pretty good up until when Porzingis got hurt. They hadn't lost the game. They had lost one game, not in overtime, to your Sixers, and it was a one possession game. You know what I'm saying? Like, so they've been like pretty good. I'm so sick of people sending, well, the Celtics are actually pretty good in the clutch. Well, like, because the clutch stats are just the most fucking bozo shit, like most arbitrary. Well, like in the last 5 minutes, if your mom is wearing a pink dress and there's a dog that's drinking a smoothie courtside, that's a clutch stat. Like, the Celtics do all their melting down with like 11 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, so it never shows up. Like, this is, it's nonsense. Don't tell me about the Celtics are good in the clutch. I'm sorry. That's absurd.
Also, I do just want to point out that the Oklahoma City Thunder, I believe, are the best team in the clutch in the NBA this year. Mm-hmm. And they just let up a 30-0 run in the fourth quarter to the Mavericks.
Well, let's go. They won the game, though.
No, but that's, they padded their net rating in the clutch because it was going to be a blowout, but because they gave up the 30-0 run, they went down to the Mavericks and then they came back and won. So their net rating in the clutch went up.
Clutch. They're in the clutch.
What a great stat.
That's a perfect microcosm of the Boston Celtics. Yeah. Is that where they're up 20 and then they just fucking piss it away at the end of the third, like top of the fourth. And then everyone said Jason Tatum has taken over after being 2-for-18 up to this point. Awesome. Yeah. He's finishing 7-for-24. Yeah. You got to appreciate him gutting it out like that. Like, so just a lot of shit like that. The Celtics are bozos. I don't know what you're going to trade though. Cause like, honestly, Sam Hauser's been exactly what I want from that spot.
He's been good. I'm very annoyed that he's good.
Yeah. You made fun of me for saying he was good. People are trying to say Peyton Pritchard's good. Peyton Pritchard stinks, man.
He stinks. Yeah, I know. He's been real bad.
He's bad. I'm like talking myself into Delano Banton more than Peyton Pritchard. That's where I'm at on Peyton Pritchard. You know, O'Shea Brissett has not been able to play. He's been hurt for a while. Maybe that like makes that up, but I just don't see where they get the money for this. Like,
I have four names for you.
Okay.
We talked about it a little bit in the group chat. There's a few guys I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you might know this, or Jake in the comments might know this. Mm-hmm. I think that Javon Carter could fit in the trade exception that you guys have, or at least it's close.
We have 6.2 from the grant.
I think he makes 6.3. You can look up Javon Carter's contract, but I think he makes it. He was 6.1. So he can fit in the trade exception. You wouldn't even have to trade any players. You might just trade minimums for him and seconds. But he's a guy who's kind of fallen out of favor with the Bulls a little bit. And if they do truly decide to blow it up, I think that if you're losing Peyton Pritchard in your rotation for the playoffs, he's a guy who at least can shoot threes and defend. I think that he might be a nice fit.
I feel like we always see, but the thing is, you just talked past one of the fell out of favor for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, but
that's the thing.
But he's not really had the opportunity, is my thing. A lot of Bulls fans are mad at Billy Donovan because of the fact that he hasn't gotten run. Like, he's been decent when he's gotten run for them. Apparently he's just like, he was a rotation player for the Bucks last year. And like, did the Bucks lose horribly in the playoffs? Yes. But also, I don't think it was Javon Carter's fault. Like,
no, I was actually pretty impressed with him on the Bucks. Like,
I think he's decent.
Yeah. He's like, he seems okay to me, but I always worry about that when we're like going and getting guys, you know what I'm saying? Those caliber of guys, when you're trading real stuff for guys of that caliber, it's like, why not see what's going on with Jordan Walsh first? You know what I'm saying? Or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause it's, the upside is just so, so small. So I find that in order for that to make a difference for the Celtics, they've got to be getting like a real rotation level player who's like proven that could be getting, basically they'd have to be getting a Grant Williams or better style player. And I don't know how you get that caliber of guy on.
Well, the thing is that you have to look at small salary players. Cause unless you're trading Al Horford, which I would love personally, unless you're trading Al Horford, you're not going to be able to acquire one of those guys. So Royce O'Neal is someone that Will suggested from the Nets. Royce O'Neal makes $8 million a year, and you could probably get there with minimums, honestly.
I think it's 9.5, actually.
Does he make 9.5?
Yeah, 9.5, according to Fanspo.
Yeah, I don't think that's you're going to reach that.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible, especially because like you can't aggregate. For people who don't understand, you can't aggregate trade exceptions. So even though they have a 6.2 trade exception, you can't like add that to other contracts to make like a bigger one. They've just got to like flat fit in there.
So Royce O'Neal is not realistic. I thought he made $8 million. So never mind. The other guys that I had written down here were, I'm not even doing a bit. Will also brought this one up. Not Jaden McDaniels, but Jalen McDaniels.
It's very funny.
Just a wing that might be somewhat playable off the bench. I mean, he doesn't, but then again, like you said, he doesn't play for the Raptors really. So that's, and he kind of stinks. So as the Sixers saw, he might not be viable in a playoff setting last year. The other guys were also from the Bulls, Torrey Craig and Andre Drummond.
Andre Drummond is the one that I want. I'm going to be honest.
Is Andre Drummond much better than Luke Kornet, though, is the question.
He does different things than Luke Kornet,
which
is important. That's the thing that's missing, is we just don't have like a big guy. Like Luke Kornet's like not terrible, but he's not good. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But like Andre Drummond is at least.
He's massive.
He's massive. You know what I'm saying? Like, and in like a different way, the Kornet contest is fun. Like, you know, how much would I give up for Andre Drummond?
Seconds.
That's the question.
2 seconds or something.
That's
the all thing, these trades are like seconds. You know what I mean? Like I don't really think that, I don't really think that any of these guys are going to acquire, like if you have to trade a first, you're going to have to include Al Horford. Because there's no player that you would trade a first for that makes less than $5 million. Who? Emmanuel Quickley?
No. Corey Kispert. Bring him home. Come on. Bring Corey Kispert. Bring
Corey Kispert. Isn't he kind of redundant with Hauser? I think Hauser's better than him.
I'll
like Kispert.
I'll take another shooter.
Yeah.
Giant, you know, wing size guy. I'd rather have that than Peyton Pritchard. Delano Banton is like the same as Peyton Pritchard. I'm sorry. Like he can't shoot as well.
Yeah.
But like he like at least cuts and doesn't stop. Peyton Pritchard stops the ball and it drives me fucking insane. Like I just, my mind bugs out of my skull. I see him fucking calling for the ball running down the lane. I'm like, you are 3'6". What are you doing? There is a center over the back of you. How dare you call for the ball? Anyway, I'm just going through like guys who have like recently been drafted who aren't.
How much does DeLon Wright make? Eight million. Yeah, it's hard to get to that number.
Tough. So it's hard. You basically need guys who have like been drafted who like might not necessarily be in the future plans, and that basically boils down to like Wizards and Jazz guys basically because they're both so deep in their rebuild that it like
teams just really hate trading young players. Like they're terrified of what happened to the Kings, even though none of them are Halliburton like ever.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's very hard to do that, you know,
because like I was interested. Someone in the Discord has been saying for weeks and months, I was kind of skeptical, but now I would be interested now that he's popped is Coby White. And I'm like, but now the Bulls aren't going to trade Coby White. Because he's had a few good games and they don't have any young talent.
Yeah. And it's tough. Like you almost need a situation where there's a better young guy like behind that guy and he's like never gonna play. You know what I'm saying? And those just don't happen very often.
Oh yeah. Yeah. What's the guy in Detroit doing? Could you get Cade Cunningham so that he's blocking Jaden Ivey's minutes?
Trade if they imagine if they traded for Sasser. That's what it all comes full circle. I'd forgive Brad Stevens if we traded for Sasser.
Like, Kira Lewis. Or so the thing about Kira Lewis is he's barely played in the NBA and he's been in the league for 3 years. Like if you're like I've had a lot of Sixers fans be like, we should trade for Ivy, and I'm like, they're just not gonna do that. Like they're not gonna give up real for a guy that isn't 100% proven that he can play in a playoff rotation. Like that's not really how most front offices think. I do just want to point out, do you know what Andre Drummond did the other night against the Bucks?
No, what did he do?
In 13 minutes, he scored 10 points on 2 of 2 from the field, had 14 rebounds, 1 assist, and 1 steal. He had 14 rebounds in 13 minutes.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Cornette's not doing that. I love Luke Cornette, but he's not doing that. You know, like, he's so... I think it's got to be like something like that, you know, where you're trading for like one of these guys. I'm also trying to like look at the Pelicans. Do the Pelicans have anyone rotting away?
It's
like,
really just Kira Lewis. Yeah. It's a perfect transition because I wanted to talk about the Pelicans before we ended this podcast.
Okay, sure. Let's talk Pelicans.
That team, it's I think that we have to do what we should have done with the Clippers a few years ago, where we just redistribute their role players, because watching that game last night, bro, Jordan Hawkins didn't get any minutes coaching decision, and he's been really good as a rookie. Dyson Daniels played like 5 minutes in that game, and their 1 through 10 was like, and Larry Nance was out for this game, and their 1 through 10 is just like all NBA level rotation players. Good ones, solid ones. Like,
they've just never been healthy. Like, we kind of knew this about them. Like, we picked them 2 years ago. It's just like, they're just the most fucking snake bit franchise in the NBA in terms of injuries. Like, it's crazy. Almost like they have a football training staff doing their training. It's almost like that's what's going on. Of course, or, you know, maybe their owner is donating money to groups that are involved with certain things. Just look up Gail Benson donations, what the Saints were... let's just say advising PR-wise on some organizations they were advising on.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of incompetence in the organization, I would say. But yes. In last night's game against the Kings, and by the way, the Kings are a weird matchup. Or I'm sorry, the Pelicans are a weird matchup for the Kings. The Kings are 11-8 on the season, so they are 11-5 against the rest of the NBA, and they are 0-3 against the Pelicans. They really bother smaller guards with their length and athleticism. Like, Maxey struggled against them in the first 3 quarters. He figured it out in the fourth and ended up with like over 30 points. But he had a season high in turnovers and 4 in that game. And he only had, I think he had 0 assists in that game. Fox has really struggled against them. He's had more turnovers than assists in their 3 games that they've played. And the fact that they can roll out Zion Williamson, he played 28 minutes last night, Zion. They won the game by 10 points, and it was honestly not even really that competitive by the end. Zion had 10, 6, and 6, and they won by 10 points. Brandon Ingram had 30. They just have scoring punch from all over between McCollum, Zion, Valanciunas, Ingram. And then they have these wings and Herb Jones, Trey Murphy, Najee Marshall, and then Dyson Daniels a little bit deeper on the bench, and Jose Alvarado, who had a great game on both ends last night, where I'm just like, can these guys please just be healthy for 3 months? Like, if they're healthy for 3 months, they're going to be a fucking problem, dude. Like, they are perfectly built for the modern NBA.
They could, like, if they are healthy, they have a chance to win the West. They would not be favored. I would not pick them, but it would not be outrageous for them to win the West. Like if
they feel like they're built for the playoffs. Like, they feel like a team that is the only thing that is not is the defense. Like I know that their defense has been really good to start this year, and Herb is an otherworldly defender, and they have all these big guys, and like I said, length and athleticism that could bother people. They still have their 3 best players are not positives on defense. Yeah. And Valanciunas is a neutral, I would say, on that end. He has his moments, but I'm still like where I'm at, where I was at from them a year ago, with in terms of they really need obviously the right health, but also there will be some defensive concerns for me. And the improvement of the Thunder, whether they want to get serious at this deadline or not and really revamp their roster for a playoff run, the improvements of the Thunder, including, by the way, basically dropping Josh Giddey from their rotation, but only because he was bad on the court. He played 17 minutes a season low the other night. But between that and the Nuggets continuity, I'd still have them a tier below that team. To me, they're in the same tier as Minnesota, and Minnesota might have a little bit more punch in terms of two-way ability. But if the offense can get right with these guys all rolling at the same time, these really high-level shot creators plus Zion, and then they could just surround them. It's everything we've ever talked about with like teams that have defensive weakness stars, where you just put a bunch of switchable defenders, guys who can get in passing lanes, guys who can muck shit up, and you just hope that it's good enough that your stars can carry you on offense. And I think that they've been awesome so far. And then if they can ever get healthy, they will be a threat in the West for sure. I can't hear Sam. I don't know if anyone else can, but
I muted myself. Sorry. What I was just going to say, I don't remember where I came down. I remember drawing a line in the sand about Lucy and the football with
the Pelicans.
Was it the Pelicans? I can't remember.
I went under, you went over, I believe.
I did go end up going over. I couldn't remember because I do believe in this team's ceiling pretty strongly.
Yeah.
It's just like, again, you know, we could be talking glowing. They were number one in the NBA this time last year. Like, you know, like the other shoe is always waiting to drop with this team. So it's very upsetting. I just don't want to get too wound up about it until we are like in March and if they're like there. So,
yeah, especially because it's not just the role players that have been snake bitten by the injuries. It's the two best players on the team. Like Ingram and Zion themselves present their own injury issues. And if we can ever get past that, then I think we'll be talking about a team that is in the top four or five contenders.
Right now they're the 8 seed, but since they've gotten healthy, I don't think they've lost a game. They beat the Sixers without Embiid, obviously. They beat the Kings again last night. Before that, they beat the Spurs. They actually lost to the Bulls. I forgot about that. That was the one game they did lose. So they're 3-1 since they've gotten pretty healthy. Trey Murphy did not play in that Bulls game. And a lot of their guys are still just coming back from injury. But, I'm excited to see where they can go at a very minimum. And look, I was wrong. I picked the Kings to beat them in that first in-season tournament game. If they get the Lakers in this next round, I mean, look, they could beat the Suns or the Lakers for sure. They have more depth than either of those teams. But if they get the Lakers in this, the Lakers win tonight, I like their chances of winning this in-season tournament.
That's the only thing that I am relieved about from as a Celtics fan perspective is like, if the Celtics won the in-season tournament and then lost in the playoffs, it just like it's just the most fraud Mickey Mouse thing. I would love for that to happen to the Lakers. I actually want the Lakers to win the in-season tournament and then just get like completely fucking bombed out of the playoffs. I think that'd be a great treat for me. So let's go, LeBron. They're saying you can't do it. They're saying you're too old. This is your moment. This is you going out on top right now. Give it your all tonight.
Cool. This is Cope.
I'm fine.
You would have loved to have been there in Vegas. You and Brian both. I see Brian in the comments saying this is fake.
Yeah, it's true. I'm just I'm chortling, laughing, reading Sylvia Plath. I'm reading about what men have done to young women. Sylvia Plath, by the way, went out too young. Much like my Boston Celtics, who peaked too early and have someday we'll look back on their greatness, but as a flame extinguished too soon after the Jaylen Brown trade next offseason.
Let's go. I think that's a good place to end it all. Let's be honest. We'll be back later in the week. You can watch streams with me on Playback. I'll be streaming for Kelly Oubre's return on Wednesday night, and then also for all of the in-season tournament games. So check it out if you have not already. Follow us on Playback and sign up for the UDouble Patreon for an extra episode later this week. I'll see you guys in a little bit. I'll be back for the games. Take care.
Hold on real quick. Just one last reminder. Patreon Gold, tell your friends, tell your family. Ooh. I'm still planning to make a little surprise. If you like the Zach Lowe, I have technology now that my creative juices flowing. So if you want to see me deploy technology for a Patreon only episode, we need more subscribers though. So
sign up.
You must sign up or you will not get it.
Patreon.
Patreon. Sign up now.
Peace.
Peace.